Hi guys, welcome to the WTS Travel Podcast number 4. This time round, we have Wei Shan from Mix Dining with us today and talk more about private dining and is it something new for tourists to look forward to. So welcome Wei Shan.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Maybe you can introduce yourself to us.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Wei Shan. I'm the chef and owner of Make Sense Private Dining. So it's where we actually host guests in my place to have a nice meal, a dinner meal or a lunch meal, and just chat and interact with one another better.
Yeah, so for Make Sense Dining, how do you come up with this idea?
So for Make Sense Private Dining, how it actually started was when we did more charity work. We started cooking to raise funds for kids or those unprivileged people. And from there, people actually enjoyed our food and thought, hey, why not you start a business? You know? And working in a restaurant for quite a while, we don't have as much experience talking to clients or speaking to guests. All we do is cook in the kitchen. So when you actually cook your food and you experience the facial expression of how your guests are enjoying your food, that really warms your heart. So that's how it all started, where a group of friends and myself gather together, and we both love cooking for passion and cooking for people who loves and enjoy our food. Yeah.
So for this company, you start with your friend, right?
Yeah, correct. With my ex-colleagues. Yeah.
So how many people is doing Make Sense right now?
For now, it's just 2% in the team.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
So how was it like before COVID-19?
It was very structured, I would say. Everything is well planned out. So maybe you have clients coming in every once in a while to dine in, and then suddenly COVID happens, and I guess you just have to adapt to flexibility. Right.
So why do you all come up with this name called Make Sense? I mean, there must be a story behind it, right?
Correct. So, Make Sense itself is actually, it has a catchword like it makes sense, you know? It makes sense. And also, throughout the dining experience with us, we want to have a mixture of senses where you have your hearing, your smell, and your taste. So, as it comes together, whenever people say the word, hey, bro, it makes sense, I can't really think of it as it makes sense, but as it makes sense now.
M-I-X,
M-I-X instead of M-A-K-E, correct.
Okay. Then why do you all choose to do private dining instead of just going the traditional route of doing like those restaurants and fine dining style?
I understand. So for me itself, restaurants-wise is fun, but it's very like production basis, where you cook and you have very little interaction with your clients or anything. But for me, I started cooking because I love cooking for people I love, or I love cooking to know more people, basically. So private dining is something that's very private in a way, where you only have a small group of people that come down just to dine, and that group of people get to know each other better through a meal, and myself also, I get to speak to them over the meal and kind of explain my dishes better, because most of the restaurants that I work in, most of the clients, they kind of say they don't really understand what they are eating because the waiter or the waitress speaks too fast. So by the time they introduce the dishes, they really forgotten what they say already. Yeah. So for us, it's also allowing our guests to understand what they are consuming and why is it in this particular dish, like why are some components or ingredients there to complement one another. Yeah.
So it's more, you go for the more close approach and being able to communicate with your guests.
Correct.
What's the benefit of that?
I guess it's the experience, because food is food, but what makes food better? The atmosphere and many factors, but something that people do not forget is the experience. So you give them a good experience during that period with a good food and everything, I think it's just a bonus for everyone to enjoy.
So you mean you say that food is an experience, it's not just food, right?
Correct. So
how do you like view like having a dinner, what's the thing that goes through your mind when you cook, and then what do you want for your customers when you cook for them?
For me, actually, it really depends. For what we do is actually like modern European with Asian influenced dishes. So I wouldn't restrict myself to a particular cuisine, but I would like to have fun with different elements in it. So during the dining experience here, I want them to be like, wow, that's something good, you know, and it's something that they talk about during the dinner, like over the food, or like, hey, what are you having, or like, do you want to share some? So it's something that basically that create conversation between them. And during that conversation, that means they deepen their relationship between one another, be it friends or family. And it's just that whole atmosphere and experience that everyone feels so enlightened and happy lah, during the period when they dine with us.
So you have 2 person working on each meal lah. So is it called a meal, or what you call this?
A meal, basically like a dining experience where we actually choose the menu for them based on their dietary restrictions. So it's kind of like a surprise menu.
So they don't choose themselves?
Yeah, they don't choose themselves.
So there's two of you are both chef, right?
Yeah, correct. So
So you cook together?
Yeah. Correct. So my colleague itself is very experienced in pastry. She does very good artisan pastries and very nice dessert lah, basically. And for myself, I focus more on the other areas. So we complement one another during our dinner or lunch lah, to cook for our clients.
So private dining as a part of local tour for Singaporeans, tourists, what do you think about it?
I think it's really an experience, because speaking to most of my friends, like, hey, what's your most interesting dining experience or anything? Usually they tell me that most of it is overseas, because it's something very different. In Singapore, it's always the same. I go to a restaurant, you know, I just eat something and then I head back, or I head over to the hawker. It's nothing that, it become a norm to them that they don't feel it's an experience that they will remember. So for us, or whoever our tourists or local tourists comes in, we create a nice experience and a moment that they can remember, in a sense that it's over food and over a very small group of people which they are comfortable with, or it can be with a small group of people which they have never met with. So on that day itself, they kind of interact and know one another better. For instance, over one dinner, we had one friend from Switzerland and one friend from also Malaysia. So from there, they actually spoke. I mean, it might be difficult in terms of conversation in language, but in terms of the accent, but after the meal, they kind of exchange contact with one another, and if they were to travel to each other's country, they'll be more than willing to bring one another around. Yeah, so it's something like that actually makes us very happy. Yeah.
Do you have like so this is one of the success story for your private dining, right?
Mm.
So what was it like when you first started out as a private dining?
First started out, definitely we faced a lot of challenges, in a sense that people are very how do you say, they do not know what is private dining, because in Singapore itself, it's Singaporeans are quite conservative lah, basically. Yeah. But overseas itself, it has been happening for a very long time already, private dining. So explaining the concept to Singaporeans itself, it's a challenge at the start. Yeah. But once they come in to my place and experience a private dining, a home dining, then they realize that it's something that they would look forward to coming back. Yeah.
How do you like I mean, there should have a lot of people like first time coming for private dining, right? So how you ease them in, like, what was the general reaction like when they approach you and when they want to come, and when they come, how was it like for them?
Yeah, so at the start, they'll start asking a lot of questions like, hey, what's the menu, or like, where are you located at, what time should I come, basically many questions, or how should I dress, you know, because, but for us, we try to be, we try to make them feel as comfortable as possible. So creating the surprise element and yet not making them feel fearful to dine in. Yeah. So they have many thoughts in their head that before coming down, it's really like an experience really. You know, they're thinking, okay, what's the place going to be like? Is it a restaurant? Is it a house? You know, should I dress like with slippers or with shoes? So they asked us many, many questions at the start. Yeah.
So what is the answer to the dress? Is there any dress code?
I think as long as you feel comfortable, we even have a client that dressed in their pajamas while dining. Yeah, so it's whatever you feel comfortable in dining. If you like to make it a more official lunch or dinner, just have to dress up. If not, you can just wear anything that you feel comfortable with.
Do you wear anything special? The chef dress or something?
Yeah, correct. So for ourselves, we'll be in our chef uniform. In a restaurant, yeah.
So you have your own logo on it?
Yeah, just our name itself.
Yeah, I see.
Mm.
So you all also set up like team dining for them, or they ask for team, then you advise them?
I think it's a surprise, right?
Yeah, but not so much of a team, like more like a basic, simple setup. But for example, like Valentine's Day, then we tend to throw in more roses just to create the atmosphere for them. Yeah, but not something so fancy and off the roof. Yeah.
Oh.
So they always go to your house, They come to your house,
Correct.
So the booking is like one day, one time, or how many times you can do in one day?
One day actually we can do twice. So for lunch and dinner, we try not to squeeze in too much. If not, it feel very rushed for both sides. Also. Yeah, I see.
So like do you have like overseas customers like coming to you for the special private dining experience also?
Yeah, that's correct.
But how they book if they are from overseas?
So some of them is they find us through Instagram or our website itself, and a lot of them is through word of mouth, where local Singaporeans themselves tell their friends like, hey, you're coming to Singapore, why not you try this place, you know, it's something different. Yeah. So word of mouth itself is very it's been nice, it's been very strong that helped us. Yeah.
So my question is, like a lot of tourists, they come to Singapore.
Mm.
Then they will always think like they want to eat our local food delights. So what do you tell these tourists? Why they should choose to come to make sense for private dining?
Definitely not wrong to try local delights, and also that we have some local twists in our menu. But one thing that actually catches them is dining in a Singapore home. You know, that's something that every tourist not every tourist can experience, because you live in a hotel or apartment, but you do not live in a HDB or like a Singaporean home. So when you actually dine in a home, you're getting a very local experience itself with a nice mix of food. Yeah.
What about our own citizen? Do you think that if I go for a private dining, it's like a going for a new experience and like a tour like that?
Yeah, I think it's an experience for them, because to be honest, most of the Singaporeans' home are really messy in a sense that it's either very cluttered or like, you know, it's not, you don't really feel comfortable. And heading to a restaurant itself, sometimes you just want to avoid the crowd and just be with your loved ones. So for this dining experience itself, it's just a small particular group, and you actually dine with a restaurant setup in a comfortable home. Yeah. So you feel like you're dining at your home in comfort.
Okay, so I think if you are coming from overseas and you love to dine in a HDB flat, and it's not just normal food, right? You will cook. What's the style of food you will cook for overseas tourists when they come over?
So mostly we do a little bit of modern European with Asian influence, so they get a good mix European cuisine, which is probably where they are comfortable with, and also with a local twist in it. So it's a nice mixture where they are familiar with the ingredients itself, but not familiar with the flavors itself. For example, a European person eating something umami. So umami itself is very Asian. So that might be something new to them or something interesting to them. Yeah.
Do you think because now we are in COVID-19, right? So we are in Singapore, we are in phase one. So let's say if phase two, where they let you do some gathering, but traveling abroad, right, is still some restriction to it. Do you think that this type of audiences, this type of Singaporeans, do you think that if they go for a private dining, right? Is it like going for a tour like that? Like, is it like you are doing European style food to them, right? Can they taste some form of those Westerns when they come in, right? When they come in for your food,
yeah.
The atmosphere, all this. Do you think they can look forward to something like this as well? Besides just going to our local destinations.
Right, I think it will be something different as well, and it could be like a, it could feel like a half day tour, you know, within your country, heading to somewhere that you have never been and experiencing a dining experience that you never had before. So it also depends on how they wanna, how adventurous are they, and how adventurous do they think, you know, like, hey, I'm going on a tour, you know, in my own country, and I'm going to dine at a place that I've never been before. Yeah, so something interesting. And at the start, I'm pretty sure that they are skeptical in the sense that, hey, I'm just going to another house to dine. But once they come into the place, I feel that it always wowed them. Yeah, it always wowed them.
Okay. So, like, they choose the menu, or you have some menus that they can choose from?
Most of the time, we like to keep the element of surprise. So what we did was we asked them for their dietary restrictions. For example, they are allergic to seafood. Okay, so seafood itself, we'll try to avoid for them. And we'll curate a menu based on the other areas that they can consume. Yeah.
Okay, so it's like we go in for the private dining, but then we don't know what we are eating, but...
Correct.
Then when we'll be surprised, so it's like exploring, and then we get to speak to the chef directly, so you can also talk us through about the food. Why do you do it this way? How do you eat this? So it's very, very personal way of eating for even for locals or for overseas tourists coming to Singapore.
Yeah, that's correct.
So everybody have their favorite food when traveling overseas. What's your favorite food when you travel overseas?
For me, what is my favorite food when I'm traveling overseas? Wow, that's a tough one. So, for example, Japan, okay? So, let's say, because I love to go to Japan, because I can relate to them better, in the sense that I admire their craftsmanship, their skills in cooking, and the details that they pay attention to. So, if I were to go to Japan, my favorite food from there would definitely be yakitori, ramen, and... tempura. So those are the top three, and of course the rest don't fall short lah. It's just a hard choice to choose what's your favorite food.
do you like go to Japan, right, and then you try out their private dining experience as well?
I would love to, but I have not had the chance yet lah. Yeah,
So like for a chef, right, do you go for tours that go overseas and places just to look just for food? Like you have some food definitely in your menu or by this chef that you really, really need to try out?
I think for me is to get exposure and to get inspiration from wherever I go, and ultimately to enjoy something that I've never had or I can't find here. So if I were to travel overseas, most of the time it's like I will search where do I get good food, you know, and then what are the local food that I'm supposed to look out for in that particular place. Yeah.
So it's like if you go overseas, you food is something that must be very important for a chef, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you cook there, or you must eat out? Don't care. Don't want to cook anymore when you go overseas.
I try not to cook lah, but if I have to, I would, because overseas their ingredients are really fresh, especially from the market or anything, but sometimes you don't have the tools or you don't have the space to cook it. But if not, I would definitely would. Yeah.
So if right now, if COVID-19 ends now, right, where do you want to go, and what food do you really you want to try like right now in the snap of a finger?
Well, I think the first place I want to go is Japan, because I'll get all the Japanese food craving in Japan first. Then I'll move on to Penang.
Okay.
Yeah, because Penang is another food place where you really get all the street food, one shot, all at a time. Yeah, all one shot. So you don't have to like go to different places to have different stuff. You have chendol, you have char kway teow, all within the same street. Yeah, it's gonna be a pretty heavy day.
Have you tried cooking your favorite food yourself? Like your yakitori, then you can make it the same taste. Then you don't need to go to Japan anymore.
Then that I wouldn't be as happy. But yeah, I ever did try before, but I guess it's just missing a lot of things in the factor of just the experience, you know, for someone to do it for you, for someone to speak Japanese to you while serving you, and also the whole experience of the restaurant, it's just different, yeah, compared to when you do it yourself.
Yeah, maybe you can hire a Japanese.
Oh, so I was thinking, like, if you are going to Penang, right? If you have to eat something, right? What's the thing that you must eat? You can only choose one.
You can only choose one. What's this? I think there's something like called in Singapore it's called Ngoh Hiang Kwang Chiang, but in Penang it's called Lor Bak.
Oh, Lor Bak.
Yeah, Lor Bak. So Lor Bak is something that, you know, I can choose many kind of deep fried food and have them at one time. Yeah, so that's pretty good. Yeah.
So Lor Bak is the brown color one where you fry. Then you
correct.
Got a lot
they
of meat inside one, is it?
Alright, with two different types of sauce, chili and their own brown sauce. Yeah.
So Lor Bak, right? In Penang, where's the best spot that you found out?
I've been to a few places. I can't really remember the the street name right now, but one of them that's quite decent, I think, it's the popular Georgetown, right? Yeah. Popular Georgetown and the other one that's really good, I can't remember the place name. Yeah.
Okay, but I think we'll find some online, and then we can not online, we will recommend you some Lor Bak. And if okay, then the second one, let's say okay, no more Lor Bak. Lor Bak, what is it?
Yeah. No more Lor Bak.
No more Lor Bak.
If it's a hot day, I'll definitely go for chendol in Penang.
Singapore also
for sure.
Has chendol. What's the difference between Penang chendol and Singapore?
Difference. Probably the sugar that they use, so Gula Melaka, the brown sugar itself, it's from different places. Not sure exactly where, yeah. But personally, I feel that I like the Gula Melaka from Gula Java, which is from Indonesia. So what's so different is that the tree itself, half of the roots are in the seawater and half of it is on land. So you actually get the nice and saltiness from the savouriness from the sugar itself, which brings up the flavour of the chendol. Yeah.
So in Singapore, the chendol we use is what type of sugar?
Just normal gula melaka. So you don't have the nice savouriness inside. So what people do sometimes is they add salt in it to kind of remake the same flavor, but it doesn't work. Yeah. Can't mimic the exact same thing. Yeah.
So the sugar come from trees or is it still sugar cane or is it something else?
It's sugar comes from. Basically, depends what kind of sugar it sounds like. So cane sugar is one of them. Right.
Okay.
So the Gula Melaka is not a special plant or anything, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So you see, the Singapore and Penang, I know some Penang's friends, right? Yeah, I know some Singapore. Then obviously, I got some Singaporean friends as well. So the Penang. My Penang friends always say that Penang food is the better one than Singapore. Then when I try out both sides, right, sometimes I think the Singapore one is better, sometimes I think the Penang one is different, is better. So what's the style difference? You as a chef, right, maybe you can give us some expert opinion. What's the style, the cooking style difference between the Penang and Singapore? Because everyone is fighting that for it, who's the best. We also don't know. Maybe we can have some insight. We don't want to see. We don't know who is the best. Maybe we can have some insight on. Hey, what's the difference between Singapore and Penang cuisine?
I think basically at the start everyone's fighting like who where did the chili crab first came or you know where has the best crab or whatsoever. But I think each country itself is tuning more towards the local and what they're looking for, and also the influence from the start, basically what ratio is there that kind of influence one another to create that particular dish. So I think both sides has its good and bad. It just really depends on which one you prefer. For me, Penang char kway teow might be nice, but I still prefer the char kway teow in Singapore. Yeah, I basically it's maybe just the taste. They could be putting too much black sauce, or they even have components like duck egg or whatsoever, which you don't have it here. You know, a char kway teow is like
there's no duck egg here.
Yeah, correct. So a char kway teow over here is like you want hum or you want chili, that's it. Over there it's like, you know, you have so many additional add-ons of ingredients that you never really see before. Yeah. or cannot have them imported here.
So the egg, does it make a difference or not? The duck egg and no duck egg?
With the duck egg, it's pretty shook.
So, what's the difference? What is the difference between the duck egg and chicken egg?
The complexity of it, how rich of the flavor it is, and the nice, when you eat your salted egg, and then you have this nice from the duck itself and the chicken egg, which is, I feel, not so strong in flavor. Yeah, and really, really salty. So the different types of saltiness from both eggs are also, that plays a big part. One is like straight on salt, like when you eat table salt. Another one is a kind of salt that is like sea salt, where you get nice flavors of minerals after you consume it. Yeah.
Mm. So you know, Penang, right? In Singapore, we got laksa. But in Penang, right, our laksa is called curry mee there.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
It's very different from Singapore laksa and Penang laksa. It's two totally different. One over here, you have very rich coconut milk, aromatic and salty. Over there, you have like Penang laksa, which is a bit sour, and a lot of ingredients and spices used in there. So, I think it's in terms of the recipe, again, the influence of how they started. But I personally prefer the one over here lah. for the laksa itself.
We call our laksa to Penang people is curry mee. So do you try the curry mee at Penang?
Yeah, which is like curry and noodle basically. Yeah.
So is there a difference between that and our laksa?
I think recipe, yes, and also the way they call it, their understanding of different food is called differently in different countries.
Okay. So besides Penang, right, our neighbor Malaysia, right, what is there that people can look out for?
Malaysia-wise, for Singaporeans, where Singaporeans love to go somewhere short, short getaway is definitely JB or like somewhere close within Malaysia. So if it's something nearby, normally they'll go for something called like lok lok or like satay.
Yeah. I think a lot of people they at night, Singapore, right, they before the COVID, they would drive over to JB for their lok lok, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Singapore got no lok lok, right? Is there any lok lok? I can't remember.
I think have, but not as much as Malaysia, or not as good,
So you specialize in what sort of cuisine? Mostly French, is it?
Because I had a previous experience in a Michelin star restaurant that does French cuisine, and also in a 5-star hotel that does Italian cuisine, so that's where I get my European experience. And for Asia itself, I actually studied Asia culinary and also Western culinary. So I kind of have a nice mix of the European cuisine and touch of Asian influence in my menu itself.
So where do you pick up your culinary interests and skills?
Actually, it all started when I was young. Because I love food, I love to eat, and I was quite a chubby kid when I was young. When you see like 5 different types of choices of food, normally I'll just go for 4 or 5 of it. I can't decide. So weight just gain and gain and gain. And also, whenever I hit home from school, my mom would always be cooking. And it just gets me excited. How can you make a raw ingredient into something, a wonderful dish, An egg itself is, it's in a shell. And suddenly it became like a nice omelette with onions and everything. So I got really curious, and my mom taught me on the way, slowly. And it's kind of like a family bonding time where you learn from one another.
So at what age, right, you start to cook your first dish?
Well, I think I started when I was about 6 to 9 years old. So that's when I started cooking, and I remember the stove is higher than me. So whatever I cook normally will fall on the floor or fall on me. Yeah.
So dangerous.
Correct.
What's the first dish you tried?
First dish I tried was actually making my favorite dish up till now. It's where you have luncheon meat, potato, onion, and tomato ketchup in it. It's like a local version of an army stew. Yeah.
So do you recommend people to cook it if they are at home, right, and they only got some instant noodle left? What do you think they can do with their instant noodle?
I think they can do anything, man, because instant noodle is just like a base starch, you know. You can play around, you can make your jiajiangmian, or you can make your braised pork with your noodle. So it doesn't really have to be that MSG from that sachet itself. It can always be a different sauce as long as you're creative.
So maybe so since you are specialized in French and a bit of fusion with Asian, right?
Italian, right? Yeah, Italian, right. And French.
Mm. Italian, French, and a bit of fusion, right?
Asian, yeah.
So what is so special about this type of cuisine? Like, I mean, people they all go for this type of food, but some people they don't know the story behind it.
French is more of fine dining or something.
Yeah, that's this perspective. Like, French are normally more atas, or like have more popular, better produce, you know, fine dining. For us, I think it's all about your preference and what you're trying to show people. For me, I kind of look up to every particular cuisine, as every cuisine has its own good and bad. You know? So you take the good from every cuisine and you put it together, and that's probably what I'm sharing with, yeah, for my dishes itself. So you kind of get a familiar flavor, but you don't really know where is it from, you know, until I explain, and you kind of like follow me through the journey throughout the dining experience.
For Italian food, I really know pizza and pasta. What else is there?
That's the main, something that's very strong in Singapore, which is pizza and pasta. But you have very nice cheese also in Italy. So you have like, one of my favorite cheese is burrata cheese, where you have one which is purely from milk, cow's milk, and one that is a mix, you know, buffalo milk and cow's milk. So it's a cheese that's very nice, soft, and moist, lah, which goes very well on a pizza also, or salad, yeah.
So they like to eat cheese raw, as in just by itself, or they always mix with something else?
For them itself, if the cheese is good, you know, they don't need anything else. But the rest are kind of like to accompany the cheese. Yeah, for example, they like to eat it with dry fruits, or be it a breadstick or some breads. Yeah.
I mean, like, if you eat cheese, right? So the first instance where I really get in contact with cheese, right? It's not those cheese slices you buy from NTUC, right? It's not those flakes of cheese. It's those very big, solid chunk of cheese, right? Right.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah.
So how, you just eat it like that. Then do you pair it with anything, with wine or something? Is it better?
I mean, if you're talking about those kind of the real cheese, not those.
So that's called a real cheese.
So as a kid I loved the one, you know, the sliced cheese where you just open the plastic and you just eat it, you know.
Yeah.
That's
the burger cheese.
Correct, the burger cheese. And then for the real good cheese, you know, it comes as a whole wheel, and they have different types of definition for it. So one is a hard cheese where it's really hard and solid. Another one is like a semi-soft cheese. So it's kind of soft, but it has texture to it, it's firm still. And another one is soft cheese, which is like burrata. It's entirely soft when you eat it. So for soft cheese itself, you know, sometimes like burrata cheese, they pair it with the salad, you know. And cheese is always good with wine, lah. For the Italian and for the French, they like it with wine. But for Singaporeans, sometimes they just eat it like just eat it like that.
Like sweet. I tried before some very, very strong, the smell very strong, I cannot take it.
Yeah. Yeah, so the way they age it, and also the type of cheese, like blue cheese in particular, is very strong for Singaporeans. Yeah.
So how do you choose the real cheese to eat? Like, if I want to entry level, what sort of cheese do I go for?
Then it depends on the category, like soft, semi-soft, and also hard cheese. So for example, if you're going for semi-soft cheese, you must ask yourself, like, what are you somebody that can take something that's very strong? If no, then probably sheep and goat cheese is really out of your options, really. But maybe if you want something more mild, or something to start with, it's like cheddar. The basics are like cheddar, mozzarella, and or there's something that's mild to the palate, you know. And then once you eat that, you go like, okay, I can go a step further. Then that's when you step on to try something more adventurous. Yeah.
So when you step up, right, what sort of step up do you look for? You look for those cheese with very strong smell, or you try to balance it? Or is there like the number one cheese that you must eat if you are a cheese lover?
Personally, I think the one cheese that people will try and will like is definitely a soft cheese like burrata. But if they want to be a bit slightly more adventurous, they can try a cheese called comté cheese. You know, it's something in France itself, it's very common or popular. It's C-O-M-T-E, yeah, comté. So it's a cheese that's very semi-hard. So it's soft and semi-hard and it's very nice. So normally you can wrap it in your parma ham or wrap it with something savory to eat with it. Yeah. So, but for example, like if you're cooking a pizza, definitely it will have mozzarella cheese and parmesan cheese. Yeah. So some dishes itself contains a particular cheese for a reason, and then the rest is like whatsoever you feel like eating. Mm.
So it's like you can cheese is like it's like steak, is it, or like wine, where there's so many range of cheese that if you get into it, you can really go all the way in. Like, what's the most expensive cheese in the world?
In the world, I'm not sure, but
okay, the one you come across.
I ever bought in a whole cheese wheel, you know, that's about probably 25 to 30 kg.
Okay, that's
a whole big cheese wheel.
How you buy it?
Yeah, so I bought it from overseas and they import to Singapore. Yeah.
Then you cook in your restaurant? In your
correct.
House,
so you cook at my place, yeah. And then we finish our mee pok carbonara in that cheese wheel itself.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long it took for you to finish the 35 kilogram cheese?
So it took us quite a while, but you can use, there are many uses for that cheese. Like, you can actually finish it grating, you can cut a chunk out, you can grate it, you can finish my mee pok carbonara inside there where as the mee pok is hot, you throw the noodles in and the cheese just melt and how do you say it, around the noodle nicely. Yeah, correct.
So it cover the noodles and...
Correct, so you have a nice
cheesy
string of beef.
Mee pok carbonara, never tried before.
Yeah,
never.
How you do that? Mee pok carbonara, what's the basic you can go?
So basically it's like your pasta noodle where Italians are very popular with their pasta. But for locals wise, what is a noodle that local like to eat? Either mee pok or mee kia, right? Yeah. So personally, I like mee pok because it has texture, it's thick. So mee pok is my kind of pasta now. So mee pok itself, I finish it cooking like the Italian way, which is with cheese, bacon, and carbonara, and even like with an egg on top. Yeah. So it gives like a nice Asian touch, but like the cooking method of a European.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay, so if we talk about cheese, right, then we definitely need to know, right, go where, which country to taste the cheese. France?
Before any country attack me, I think every country has its good cheese and France or Italian or Italy itself normally is a to-go place to get the cheese. Yeah.
So if you go to France or Italy, Europe, right? Usually people, I don't think they chong the cheese lah, but I think they go for the basic, like those basic dishes that we usually eat, right? So for tourists, right, if you are next time you're going to Europe, right, you want to try something adventurous or cool, right, you can go to Italy or France and just go get their cheese. Is it available in all their supermarkets?
Supermarket definitely it's available, but sometimes in restaurants itself, it's their first course in the meal. Definitely to have bread, butter and cheese. So it really depends in the country itself. Yeah.
So what are you doing now? Any shout out to your audience, to our audience?
I would say that definitely this is a hard time for everyone. It's something that gets you out of your comfort zone and something different for everyone. So everyone's looking forward to travel once the COVID ends or once the lockdown ends, and everyone will just travel to your favorite destination for food or whatsoever. Yeah, so I would say just hang in there lah. And we'll get through this together.
Oh yeah, I'm so like curious, right? How's business for Mixed Sense now? Is it right? How is it?
At the start itself, it's definitely tough because you can no longer have anybody coming in to dine. That means you have no income at all. So again, we have to be adaptive and to change. Or another way is to be stubborn and say, hey, things will get better and I'll just wait for it to get better. Yeah, and normally it doesn't happen that fast lah. So what we did was to be adaptive and to accept whatever's happening, because that's the real world. and we just have to change whatever we're doing. So we actually did like a survival kit, you know, where it has all the ingredients inside. You just have to get it, bring it home, open it, and reheat it and cook it together. For example, a pasta, the sauce is done for you. You just have to cook the noodle and put it with the sauce. That's it, simple as that. And then once we did that, we realized that the industry itself gained notice, and many people started doing it also. So for us, it doesn't matter who started it, as long as it helps the community. And then we move on to like gourmet takeaway, and also now we're doing donuts, freshly baked, freshly made donuts. Yeah. So that actually helps us to keep everyone happy and also to be able to keep our jobs. Lah. Yeah.
So you're still making food at home? Lah?
Yeah, and definitely.
Selling it online?
Yeah, selling it online through our website to get it. Yeah.
So later you can share with us your website. Lah.
Yeah,
maybe we can put it up.
Yeah,
sure.
It makes sense is, if I'm not, it makes sense, our website is makessenseprivatedining.com, right?
Yeah. Correct, that's it.
So they can order your food also?
Yeah, so basically they can order whatever's on our website, and if they realize that we are doing something, maybe like a different menu that they see people consuming, but they don't see it on our website, it's probably something special, you know. They have to drop us like an email, say, hey bro, I saw that online, you know, can I have it? Then it's something exclusive that we will do it for them too. So we do cakes and everything as well, so birthday cakes and many other things. Yeah.
So you do already, then the delivery man will come and collect and send over. La.
Right,
so they can do a special request. La.
Yeah.
So there's a form for them to fill up anything.
Yeah, all the details are there, the address they put, and then the quantity they want, and you just contact them, and it'll just be posted like that. Yeah. Something simple.
Okay, so... Okay, like the survival kit, you say you will cook with them. Does it mean that if they choose this, so I saw this menu in your website, right?
Yeah.
It's called beef bolognese pasta.
Yeah.
So when they purchase it, it's not cooked yet, or they have to cook it themselves?
So everything inside is really there for them. For example, the garnishes, the cheese and everything. The only thing they need to cook is the pasta itself, where it's still dry pasta. You have to cook it. And they just have to heat up the sauce and put the pasta with it. So it's something that they can do it within 15 minutes, depending on their level of skills. La. And most of them do not know how to cook, so they are really worried and scared at the start. So we actually have this manual for them, an online manual, step by step on what they should do, you know, like taking a pot, how much water should I put? Okay, for example, fill up to this certain amount, you know, bring it to a rapid boil. So those manuals actually help those people that are not so familiar with cooking to get through. And one of the mom actually threw this manual and the survival kit to their kid, to their kids, and then their kids actually cook it, you know, they surprise their mom, and they are able to execute the dish with such simple instructions. Yeah, so it's kid friendly also. Yeah,
so it's one way where you can go do your first cooking and then have it not taste so bad, you get all your ingredients right.
Correct.
Because I think cooking, right, the most, okay, the thing that is, I think for me, la, when I cook, I'm not a really good cook. La. So I think the most challenging thing for cooking
is washing up, right?
Washing up is one. cooking, I think, is still okay. But the most challenging part is going to the market, right, and get all the these things, all these vegetables,
ingredients
you need. Because you want to cook this mee pok, you need to get the mee, right?
Yeah.
Or you need to get the pork, minced pork, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes I think you the minced pork, you go to you see the minced pork when you cook is white color one, right, after cooking.
Yeah.
So you go to the NTUC, you see there's a lot of pork.
Yeah.
Then they are all like red color and stuff. Then there's different type of mince and stuff. So I was like, oh my god, that's also the very difficult part for cooking, right?
Yeah, correct. It's the fundamental of the ingredients itself for the dish. Yeah. And I think many people, what they have in trouble is that they don't know what to cook every day, because it becomes like a hustle. Oh shit, what should I cook today? What should I cook tomorrow? It becomes like a chore where they have to plan out their week menu, you know, to cook for their family. So with this, it's like, what do you feel like eating? Okay, I just whip it up within 10 minutes. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think you got like sauce. Sauce is the most important thing. I think correct. It's very hard to mix a sauce that tastes good, especially for dishes like those bolognese pastas and even some other Italian style noodles, I think they are very big on the sauce one, right?
Yeah, correct, correct. And then some guests or clients, they are really, really happy because they are housewife and they are like working ladies themselves, and they have never cooked for their husband before, you know, because they don't know how to cook. But after getting this kit, and she told the husband, "Hey, I cooked dinner for you." The husband was surprised. So when the husband actually ate it, he said, "Hey, this is not your cooked one, right? Because it's really good." Yeah.
But is it pre-cooked or is it just raw ingredients?
So some of it is raw ingredients, like the pasta itself, and the sauce itself is made. So she actually just warm up the sauce and cook the pasta and fold them together, and she gave the husband. Yeah. So she admit that with the help of the survivor kit, it make the day of the husband. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
So if you are staying at home, right, for so long, then some of you guys still stay at home, work from home, right? So you tired of your house downstairs, the kopitiam food, or you are so tired of the home cooked food that you've been trying. Maybe you all can give a mixed sense tactical survivor kit a try. Like cook something good, and you don't need to worry about shopping for ingredients. All delivered to their doorstep, is it?
Yeah, that's correct.
Is it video or is it just menu?
Just the menu itself. Which is very, very simple and step by step for them to follow through.
I see you have normal bread. So is it they have to bake themselves or is the bread already?
No, for
baked?
That it's pretty straightforward. We just give you the bread already. Some of them do not have oven.
No oven, That's why I'm thinking not everybody has oven at home.
Yeah.
I was thinking like not everyone got oven, so very hard to do bread. Right?
Yeah. Actually, like a lot of couples got this because couples in the sense that they are dating and they live in different houses, so they can't really meet one another now. And buying food for each other gets a bit boring, you know, and gets a bit mainstream. So they actually buy this survivor kit for their other half, and they do like a video call with each other to cook, to have a cook-off, you know, to have a cook-off. And at the end itself, they have like a virtual dinner date or lunch date. Yeah, which is something interesting because of time they have to do this kind of thing, but it's something innovative and interesting that's happening.
I think it's really an interesting choice. Even like for travelers, right? Because we are a traveling company, travel agency. So like, of course now everyone is staying at home, right? So one way that people can still taste food from overseas, one is you buy them from online sources. Buy them in to us, and then you eat like those local delights. Chinese we call 土产 from other country. Then you buy in, so you can eat. So you just feel like you are eating some food from overseas, lah. So another way is I think the tactical survivor kits is actually another way where people can go for overseas food. Like we give them the menu, pack everything out, then they can buy. They just buy it and then they do very basic cooking, and they do, and the basic cooking, I think from what you describe, is like, okay, maybe you heat up the water or you cook the meat for a little bit. So it's like you're cooking the instant noodle like that, really, right? Almost, right?
Yeah, but you get a gourmet meal out of it. You get a restaurant standard gourmet meal out of it.
Yeah, so you also get a gourmet meal out of it. So I think it's a very interesting idea. I think if you are interested, you all can
support nice.
Them. Support makes sense for their food lah.
Can you choose two of your favorite weekend destination and two weeks long destination? So weekend and 2 weeks long.
Weekend destination would definitely be like, for me, Vietnam.
Why Vietnam?
Why Vietnam? Because it's still here. I mean, it's things are cheap there. It's crazy in terms of like the motorbikes are everywhere, and you know, it's just messy. And sometimes you need that kind of mess for a short getaway, you know, something that's less structured. And you just walk on the street and everywhere is filled with cheap food, you know, like affordable food. And it's good lah. It's not something that, you know, you pay that amount and get lousy quality. It's something that you pay that amount and you get quality that's way more than what you paid for. Yeah.
Apparently, right, in Vietnam, right, their food, right, Their rice is fantastic. If you haven't been there, their rice tastes so much different than the one you have in at home.
Correct. And even maybe like a broken bowl rice, which they are famous for, you know, it's pretty decent with the great barbecue pork. Wow. It's a nice weekend, you know, to get your cravings and, you know, head back to Singapore.
So, Vietnam, you've been to Hanoi?
Yeah, Hanoi, Ho Chi Minh, Da Nang. You know,
Da Nang? What's that in Da Nang?
Yeah. Basically, more on the scenery. Very quiet scenery, beautiful place. Mm.
Then what about your long weekend on 2 weeks?
2 weeks,
2 weeks. 2 weeks long. If I actually went to China or Japan itself, I think I could stay there for 2 weeks without getting bored. Definitely. Yeah. So because for example, China, I've been to Shanghai, Beijing, and many other of the small places in China itself. It's actually quite underrated lah, in the sense that there are actually many nice places to dine, mall, any shopping mall bigger than Singapore or bigger than many, many places, because it's just huge, you know, and the amount of stuff that you can see and experience there, especially with their technology that's so high tech, everything is via the phone to pay, you know, it's quite interesting because you're actually moving towards the future, I would say, in China, that's moving very fast. Yeah, and it's experiencing something that you don't see in your own country and learning something new and perhaps bringing something back, you know, be it a recipe or be it, you know, something. Yeah.
Actually, selecting China as a destination, right? It's actually quite interesting. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people will, we asked a few of our guests, most of them choose to go either Japan, Europe, New Zealand, and but we seldom get people that says they want to go China for a long weekend. So when was the first time you went to China?
I think when I was a little boy, maybe like 10 years old or something like that. And then the most recent one was about 2 years ago, where I was looking for really nice food, but I went to Shanghai. So Shanghai itself, the cuisine, they are came towards a more sweeter side. So for example, like even xiaolongbao, you know, it's nice, but it's towards the sweeter side, which might not be what we're looking for. Yeah, but it's nice in a way that you're experiencing a different culture, and everyone's speaking Chinese, you know, so it gets really, really fast and fluent Chinese, so it gives you some time to kind of adapt and understand what they're trying to say. Yeah.
So you take some time before you can process their language.
Correct. Because maybe they're on their third sentence of speaking really. I'm still processing the first one. So I'll have a lag time.
So what's okay. So this is something I'm like quite curious about. Because you must be a trip, right? Or something that happens during a trip that makes you like really want to go back to China for a 2 week trip, right?
Yeah, I guess it's the people that I met there, be it culinary friends or be it, because I have my dad has some colleagues over there also, so the locals actually bring me around China to experience the culture in terms of the museum and the food wise, where their secret hideout for their best xiaolongbao or like their best pancakes, you know, and it's very interesting because you're actually experiencing the local food in the local culture and not the typical tourist places, you know, where you typically go to a shopping mall to eat in a restaurant, but no, I've been to like a small broken down house to have like a nice meal over there. Yeah.
So China wise, right? People always, for me, if I think about China, I always think about like sceneries and stuff. Yeah. But apparently that's not just only part of China, right? So there's the culture itself, although we are Chinese, is it a bit big difference when you go there?
I think it depends which part of China, but so far it takes quite a while to get used to. Yeah. But it doesn't matter as long as they understand what you're speaking, that's fine.
if you go to China, that means it's I think it's something interesting, like food itself is way different, right? And we are influenced so much by their food as well. and also shopping and technology. Do you use cash there more, or you use electronic payment more when you're in China?
Yeah, so they normally use like WeChat Pay or Alipay, you know, and if you actually take cash out, they look at you like you're from like 1990s.
Really?
Yeah, or you look like a tourist. Again, it depends on which part of China. Yeah, but for the more modern side itself, yeah, quite advanced with technology itself. And the local itself tell me, you know, you can don't bring your wallet out, but you need to bring a power bank and a handphone out. If not, you can't pay for anything.
Oh, really? Oh my god.
Yeah.
So actually, China's changed a lot. There's a lot of things that going on there, and a lot of people, most people that go, I think a lot of youngsters, they never think of China as a destination until now, I think. And the next thing is, China, if you want to go one city, which city must go?
Must go, oh dear. I think... Well, I can't remember of the name itself, Sunny. but I've been to quite a few places in China itself, but the name always gets me because my Chinese isn't really good. Yeah, but yeah, there's some places that I've been. You know, it really depends if you want to look for a scenery or you want to look for like shopping, because different part itself gives you a different experience. So for example, shopping, definitely you go to Shanghai and Beijing because it's a very modern place where it's fast moving. But if you want something slower, you go to maybe more village side so you can see the scenery and slower pace for you. Yeah.
So if you go China and you do a free and easy, is it better to do a free and easy, or is it more comfortable to take a tour? What do you think?
I think really depends on what you need, but a tour definitely helps you, helps you plan out everything. So if you just want a fast getaway and, you know, someone please plan it for me, you just get a tour because they are there for you, they create the itinerary for you, and you just follow through without thinking much. Yeah, so you just experience the tour of whatever they have planned in line for you. Yeah, for that way. But for free and easy, it really depends if... the Chinese isn't very good, or, you know, if you're going to China, the Chinese isn't very good, or like, you know, if the Chinese isn't very good, it's not a good idea to go on tour unless you're really adventurous. Yeah.
So it's better to, if you want to have a more comfortable trips, you can just take a tour package to China, and if free and easy, then definitely the most important thing is you want to look at their public transport network, right? How is it like?
Public transport itself, I think it's all right because I just hired someone to drive me around. Yeah, but aside from that, I actually rented a bike, and I thought it was a good idea to cycle around the park. But a park in Singapore, maybe it's about 10 km, you know. But over there, a China park, it's definitely not 10 km. It's like a whole river that I have to cycle through, you know, like one whole big round. So it was quite challenging. Yeah, it's quite challenging. So it really depends on their mode of transport, but it's quite advanced now. Pretty easy.
So if you get your own transport, China's, is it called Baoche?
Yeah, Baoche, yeah. They have different apps for the taxis and the transportation.
So Baoche, is it expensive or not? Is it worth it?
I think depends which area you are at. Like for this touristy area, it's more, the surcharge is higher, you know. And then the local recommend you like a certain types of taxi to take, which can save you a bit.
Will they overcharge you?
From my experience so far, I haven't gotten that yet. But yeah, but otherwise, you know, you always do look out when you are not in your own home country lah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So we should choose Vietnam and China, which is pretty interesting. Do you buy, like, can you buy rice back from Vietnam? Or not?
You can, but you do need more luggage. weight, extra weight, yeah.
Do you try bringing their rice back? Because it's really very nice, their rice.
It's very nice, yeah. But what I did was actually I bought the cooked rice back, which was with the broken rice and the nice barbecue pork, you know, because the trip over back is maybe 2-3 hours. Quite fast, basically. But you still need to eat something, so I'll always tapao something from from Vietnam itself, and when I'm heading back, I could eat that on plane or while waiting for the plane.
Okay. So you all can, next time you all go Vietnam, right, not only you can get their famous coffee back, you can also consider taking their rice back. It's really very tasty, seriously. I went Vietnam, right, if you can eat one bowl of rice in Singapore, if you go Vietnam, you will take two bowls, because it's really very nice. Like, there's some taste in the rice. Very different from Singapore, la. That's what I feel. La. Then if you all want to go China, then definitely bring a portable charger. Keep your phone alive. And to not to be overwhelmed, maybe you want to consider getting a private mini tour bus or follow a tour to China. La. That's what we feel. La. And that's what we feel you can look at us. La. Next time when COVID-19 open, you can come to us and we have a few of our China tour package. Where you can look at with all the tours, and sometimes we also have a free and easy one. So we're just trying to give you some ideas what you can. If you go China, you don't want to do some free and easy travel, book for us. We have you all covered. So next thing, the last one, since actually we've been talking for 1 hour plus already. So now the thing is, anything you want to say for Make Sense before we close this out?
Yeah, I mean, things are always changing, and so is our menu and whatever is available on makesenseprivatedining.com. So always, you know, look out, and the best is support local lah. Because if you don't support local, who are you going to support? Yeah, so always help one another out, and I believe the spirit and everything will keep us there lah. To help one another, yeah. So enjoy, and once this is over, I think you guys can travel as much as you want with WTS.
Yes.
Yeah.
Choose us. Okay, thanks. Actually, if you all really want to when you can, right, I suggest you all try out private dining, because I think it's something interesting in Singapore. Like, besides just going to the pub for drinks or hanging out at Kopitiam or doing some other way, like those steamboat, I think private dining is something very interesting. Like, if you got someone you want to go to, I think it's a new experience. Fine dining is one, private dining is something, it's another, it's different type of level. So if you got friends or tourists coming to Singapore and you cannot cook for them, then they already been to Kopitiam, then I think you all can consider trying private dining at Make Sense. Try out different type of fusion cuisine, and then they don't tell you what they cook. So you just go there and eat. So you can be surprised also. You don't need to what to choose. And if you bring your girlfriend go, you say, hey, I don't know what they cook. We just go eat. I don't need to think so much. Don't need to choose for your girlfriend also. You all don't need to have an argument on what to eat also. So I think it's something interesting as well. Right? Even if you go to fine dining restaurants, some of them, they have menu that you choose. You have to choose one, two, or three. And then this type of thing sometimes also costs a lot of... a lot of issues and discussion take very long, lah. So might as well just go for private dining, right? So the website is for Make Sense is makesenseprivatedining.com. Right now, you all can try out their survivor kits and their waffle pizza. So back to us for our closing, right? We just want to say that thanks for listening to our podcast. You can find us at Spotify, YouTube, and at our Facebook as well, lah. So when you see this, we'll be around the chat. If you got anything you want to ask, just ask away. Help us share this, like this, to your friends that love to eat. Want to go? If you got friends that feels like they want to go to China or want to go to Vietnam or want to see, hey, why do you want to go Penang? For the food. I think we cover all of this today. I think it's something interesting. You can share it to them and let them hear out. And another thing is we started this e-commerce platform called pingo.com.sg. So we are actually selling overseas tour products from namely from Malaysia. We sell this sell their Ming An biscuits. And we also have a mask and thermometer available at our pingo.com.sg. So if you're interested, you all can check it out. We'll link it up here. And I think that's all. Anything you all want to say for your last word? Not last word, like closing words.
So thank you for hearing us out, and we look forward to having you.
So be sure to check out Make Sense and pingo.com.sg, and see you again. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, you have come to the end of the podcast. If you like what you hear, subscribe to our podcast. Join us at YouTube at youtube.com/WTSTravelYouTube. Join us at our Facebook, facebook.com/WTSTravel.